League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Touchdown Trips. No music, no highlights, no anything to open the show today, because before we get into what was a bizarre and you know, seriously bizarre Sunday of week six action, loads of talking points to get into, whether it's injuries, whether it's upsets, whether it's teams looking dominant that we didn't expect, all of the above. It's only right we begin today's podcast by addressing the sad passing of a brilliant broadcaster, a wonderfully warm human being, a man who gave all the time in the world to any of us whenever we had any interaction with him, the brilliant Kevin Cadle. Just from a personal perspective, Kevin was due to actually join us, Big Kev, on the show on Sunday night on Talk Sport, and he actually texted Mike Carlson on Sunday morning saying that he'd been in hospital with a viral infection, that he didn't feel up to the show that week, but asked if he could come in the following week and seemed in overall good spirits. For him to then pass away with kidney failure that night, and for us to get the message the next morning after we've, you know, just broadcasted 12 hours of live NFL and are coming off the adrenaline rush and the high of doing that, was just genuinely absolutely devastating. There's so many great stories come out about the great man since over the last couple of days. Just from a personal perspective, when I first moved down to London in 2012 as an incredibly precocious young man, wanting to be a radio presenter, wanting to get to the kind of the top of the game, but knowing that NFL was part of what I wanted to do with that, I turned up at a few events and I managed to get Big Kev's ear a couple of times.
You badgered him.
Badgered him, basically.
Yeah, you do what you do best.
But it wasn't badgering as far as he was concerned. He was always willing to give you the time of day. His warmth and generosity was just unsurpassed by kind of anyone else in the scene at the moment. And it really made me think this morning. Ollie Hunter's here as well, and Matt Sherry joining us on Skype from up in Dun North East. It kind of really made me think and reflect afterwards about just how odd the NFL UK community is, because when you really think about it, there is this small close-knit community of guys, whether it's ourselves on Talk Sport, the guys from the BBC like Simon Clancy, Mike White, Fletch, you know, all of those guys who I feel close to, whether it's the guys from Sky with Neil Reynolds and everyone else, or, mm-hmm. or if it's from all the, you know, the independent podcasts, the people at Gridiron Gentlemen, the people at NFL Girl UK, the people on the NFL UK Facebook group, all of that sort of stuff.
UK Packers, Arrowheads Abroad.
Yeah,
all of those
exactly,
guys.
Exactly. And the kind of the closeness that we've kind of got as this little community. And it's really today feels like we've lost a big member of that community. And whether it was spending time with him at events in London in the evenings, when he'd come down and do some of the events that we did at the Hippodrome and some of the ones we did at the sports bar, and whether it was interacting with him in person. I mean, I can only imagine for somebody like Neil Reynolds, who worked with him week in, week out, side by side, for Mike Carlson, who used to work with him on, you know, Claymore's games back in the late 80s, early 90s. These are guys who knew this man for 20 plus years, and what they must be feeling today. We are going to be speaking with Neil Reynolds coming up momentarily and getting the thoughts of Neil. Obviously, he's a close friend of Gridiron, does a lot of work with us, and I know how devastated he's been today. So we'll be hearing from Neil as well. But, you know, it hit me really hard this morning and was a little bit bizarre because I was sleeping off last night and I got the text from Ollie telling me what had happened, and I kind of fell back asleep and then woke up a few hours later and genuinely thought it was just a horrible nightmare. Genuinely thought it was just a bad dream. And I was like, I thought that my brain had associated the fact that Kev had been off the night before and not with us, and added that into something else horrible lingering in my mind. And I had to check my phone, and then saw I had dozens of messages from people and social media and everything else. And the outpouring has been absolutely wonderful to see for Kev. But I don't know how much interaction, how well you knew Kev, how you felt about him as a broadcaster, but just horribly sad news today.
Just horrific. I mean, I personally, my main interaction with him was a few years ago at the Super Bowl in New York, and And that was the first time I'd met him in a forum of talking face to face. It was me, Kev, Jeff Reinbold, Neil Reynolds were just at a barbecue place in New York, and we were there all night. And he was so interested in Gridiron. That was our first year, and was just so warm. What a lovely, lovely man. Like, just a gentleman. And his wife is a lovely, lovely woman as well. And she was, to be honest, the main person I've thought of today, because I can only imagine what she's going through. And my thoughts have certainly been with her and that family all day, and will be for a while yet, because it's such a shock to the system. And actually, I mean, he was kind of following me on yesterday after I'd been on with you guys at TalkSport. And I was looking forward to hearing him on there. We've not seen him as much on TV in recent times. Will, me and you spoke early last week about the fact that he was coming on, and I said that I remember saying to you, that's a great get.
I was so excited on Sunday morning about the fact that we were just going to get to spend some time with him on Sunday evening.
Yeah, absolutely. And we actually had that conversation last week when we were discussing me coming on, and it's just news like this always does just knock you for six. And ultimately, I felt it personally, but nowhere near as much as the guys who worked with him a lot. I mean, I've texted back and forth with Neil for a little while today, and he is absolutely heartbroken, as you can imagine. And it's at that point you see the impact that he had on so many lives. And I've learned more about him today. I knew he was a basketball coach. I didn't realise he was such a successful, outrageously successful.
The greatest basketball coach in British domestic basketball history, and it's absolutely not even close. Eight Coach of the Year titles, 27 titles across the years that he coached. Like, unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's part of a legacy now, and we should remember that, but also with the sadness that really we should have got a lot more time with him, and it's just a shame, really.
And it makes you think of some of the reasons why we didn't get so much time, and I don't think this is quite the right place to do it and the right time to do it, but from my point of view, I was so looking forward to working with him. I would have produced him and Mike and Nat upstairs on TalkSport, and I'm gutted that I didn't get to meet him. And so I'm looking at this from, I know you two have met him, but I'm looking at this from a fan's point of view. And when I first started getting into the NFL 5 or 6 years ago, he was the face that you'd see. And what a beautiful face, like a really soft, warm face. That lovely smile, his big chubby cheeks. And, you know, some of the most endearing images or memories that I have are with him and Cecil carving open a turkey. And I think that will be the same for a lot of other people.
And I'll tell you what as well, Ed, like, one of the hardest balancing acts when you're doing this kind of broadcasting, when you're doing the NFL, and people will know this who are kind of fans of what we do and fans of what, you know, is done on Sky, etc. It's trying to get that balance between being informative, being friendly, being welcoming to new people, and being able to make sure that the hardcore fans are serviced whilst the new people who are coming into the sport are welcomed in. And there was nobody better than Kev. And I understood why Sky in the last couple of years made the decision to try and change up what they were doing on TV. But he was a loss on TV. He was still working regularly. I mean, saw him just a couple of months ago and he was an absolute picture of health. Like, it's genuinely stunning how sudden it is. And I think the whole of the NFL UK community are mourning today. And look, what we're going to do on the show, we're going to speak with Neil Reynolds now. In the sake of honesty, we're doing this conversation on Tuesday night. On Monday night, I'll be speaking with Neil on Tuesday. So you'll hear this podcast around Tuesday lunchtime. But look, we're going to... It's a really horrendous cliche to say, but what Kev would want today is that after we've taken our time to mourn him and remember him, that we go on and we do a normal show and we try and still have as much fun and we still try and enjoy the NFL, the sport, a sport that he loved so much, as much as we can. So,
and a man who brought fun to it more than any broadcaster ever has in the UK. I mean, we did discuss how we do this, and that was one of the things I thought, well, we rightfully talk about it now, but ultimately this is a guy who literally his whole thing was bringing the fun to it, and that's what we try and do as much as we can on this show, and it's what hopefully we'll do later on in this show as a continuation of that.
And I think with what he did, and he did it for so many years, perhaps without him, us three wouldn't be here talking now. Yeah. We wouldn't have had the show on TalkSport 2 yesterday, and we wouldn't be trying to further our careers. I'm not saying that he is, you know, the entire inspiration, but without him, certainly, we wouldn't be where we are.
I think on a week where we've got a third of four sold out games coming up in London, and the growth of the game over the last 15 years, more than anything else, he's been a huge part of that. So we'll hear from Neil Reynolds now, and then we will get on with our normal show, slightly truncated, because you don't want to hear us going on for about an hour and a half. So we'll have 40 odd minutes of football chat. But here is Sky Sports' Neil Reynolds with his thoughts on Kevin Cadle.
Well, I mean, it's always a pleasure to be speaking with Neil Reynolds, but I really wish the circumstances were more positive ones. Neil, a rough couple of days, obviously, it's been a real pleasure, I guess, to see just how positive the outpouring has been for Big Kev.
Yeah, I mean, just such horrible, horrible, shocking news that myself and Sean Gale received as we were coming out of the studio on Sunday night, and yeah, just shocked and devastated, heartbroken. I mean, it's just been an awful couple of days, but the one positive and the one thing that's kind of kept me going is, you know, I literally haven't got off Twitter. I haven't been able to get off Twitter. I mean, crikey, you just see the outpouring of love for the man, and it's been fantastic. And, you know, I recorded a video message for Kev, which you know, played out on Sky Sports and on NFL UK, and, you know, people sort of thanking me for doing that. Well, it was, you know, it was a privilege to be able to do that. But I do appreciate, you know, so many people have sent messages, not only sort of paying tribute to Kev, but sort of offering support to all those who kind of knew him, loved him, and worked with him. And, you know, I feel very fortunate to have been one of those people. So, yeah, massive, massive thank you to everyone who's taken the time to tweet, because it's been the most ridiculous response I've ever seen in terms of numbers. I mean, I'm kind of, every time I check my, yeah, I went, give you an example, yesterday I had checked Twitter, and then I went to make a cup of coffee, and I came back and there were 311 notifications, and I'd only made a cup of coffee. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, thank you. Huge thank you to everyone. And it's just it's the mark of the man. It shows how much Kevin Cadle touched us all.
And I think that's it, isn't it? There are very few people in life who no one can say anything negative about. And I know, you know, at a time like this, no one would say anything negative. But I think if you'd asked people a week ago, you know, while Kev was still with us, they would have been just as positive then. And all the personal stories we've been getting about the amount of warmth he had, the amount of time he always had for people, how he always just loved to talk about the sport with people. And I think that's what I've really reflected on the last couple of days, is you kind of don't really realise how special it is with NFL in the UK, that there's this really close-knit community of people that cover and work within the sport. And it doesn't matter if you work for Sky or BBC or TalkSport or, you know, an independent magazine or blog or whatever it might be. Everyone's got this really kind of positive relationship. And I think it's people are realizing just how much of an impact that Kev had on the sport as it's grown over the past kind of 10-15 years.
And I saw that right from the very first time I started working with Kev, and I'd like to think that, you know, if I'm walking from the tailgate party into a stadium to cover an NFL game, it takes me a while. I will stop and try and meet the fans, and I think we all want to do that, because ultimately we're just fans as well. We're just fans who are able to sit in a chair and talk about the sport that we love. And so, you know, I learned that and saw that from Kev, you know, a very kind of my formative time as a sort of TV person. And, you know, it's the right thing to do. We should all be kind of mixing together. I feel like the way everyone has responded the last couple of days, it shows this is an NFL family. And you're right, Kev was universally loved, and one of the things that I'll remember, and I'm so glad we did it, because you don't want all of that love to just come when somebody's gone, you know. And I'm so glad that we took Kev on our NFL UK live tours last January. So we took Kev to the nights that we did in Cardiff and Southampton, And we had Jay Ajayi there. We had, you know, we had starting players from around the NFL. And the man who got the biggest cheer, I mean, it was a standing ovation. It was a standing ovation for Kevin Cador. And, you know, he walked onto stage and I, in Cardiff, and the place erupted, and I just hugged him, and I wouldn't let go of him. And I was, and the whole audience was just chanting, "Bring back Kev." And he kind of turned and he, you know, he tried to sort of aw shucks it and play it down. But I'm glad he had that kind of moment, you know, outside of the TV studio, but, you know, to for everyone to sort of show him how much he meant to them then. And so, you know, that's a thing I've been looking back on the last couple of days. You know, I'm really glad we got to do that for a couple of nights on tour in January.
I think people will always remember Thanksgiving, and will always remember him on the Sky coverage with you guys, and just how much fun he made it and how welcoming he made it for everyone that was watching it. But what are kind of your memories from that time when you guys first started on Sky, going right through? Because it looked like you guys were having a whale of a time, I have to say.
We were, and that's the trouble sometimes. We were. I mean, you can YouTube some of Kev's finer moments. There's bits where there was one time when we came back from a break, and you know he thought he was reading the auto cue, and he says blah blah blah, and you can hear the producer screaming in his ear, "We're live." The reason he didn't know we were live is because we'd laughed and joked all the way through the break, and we'd kind of forgotten we were on a break. We were messing around and laughing about Madonna at the Super Bowl, and then Kev forgot to pick his microphone back up, and it was just, that was just Kevin. We went back to the game at the Super Bowl and we're just giggling. We, you know, some broadcasters would be distraught for Kev. Life was too short for all of that. And we got back to the hotel that night, and I think our producer was kind of, you know, had his head buried at one end of the bar and was sitting there and sort of looking, "Oh my God, I can't believe that happened." And me, Kev, at the other end of the bar, and a drink, Kev's like laughing, goes, "Look at him down there." I mean, and, you know, he wasn't beating himself up. It was just, life was too short to worry about that stuff. And, yeah, I've learned that from Kev as well. You know, if I stumble over a few words, or a couple of weeks ago, some music played by mistake into our studio while Sean was talking, and we just laughed about it. I mean, what are you going to do? You're not going to be like, I don't know, you can take yourself too seriously. I learned not to do that with Kev, I think, now. And, just a great, I remember, yeah, you know Kev, he always said, "Let's get back to the ball game. We've got ourselves a ball game." You know, it was never just a game, it was always a ball game. And he got wind of the fact that, you know, there was university students around the country that were playing drinking games associated with what Kev said. And they took a shot of drink every time Kev said ball game. So there was one game we did, and he must have said ball game about 15 times in an hour. I mean, it was overkill. He was really going for it. And he kind of turned to me, he winked, and he went, "Those boys are going to be wasted tonight."
That is absolutely superb. I think people are really looking forward to the opportunity this weekend at Twickenham as well. NFL UK confirming that there's going to be a chance to remember Kev. I think it's really poignant that this week, when we're seeing the third of four sold out games in a season, and just that continued growth, that people are going to get a chance to remember one of the kind of giants of the game in this country. So I don't know if you know anything about what's going to be happening Sunday, but I think it'll be really, really joyous, whatever does happen. And I think people are really looking forward to getting that opportunity to share that together.
Yeah, I sat with Alistair Kirkwood from NFL UK yesterday, who, you know, for Alistair, it was a no-brainer. We're gonna remember Kev, and I'm not sure of the exact timings of when it will be, but both myself and Alistair said, you know, for us, it feels like, you know, Kev was a minutes applause man, not a minutes silence man. I don't know what you know. So I think I don't know the timing of when that will be, but that is where I think it's going to be going, and I'm sure Twickenham will rise as one and, yeah, pay tribute to a man who's helped put a lot of those bums in those seats, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Look, Neil, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with us. And I know, obviously, it's a difficult time at the moment, but I hope you're taking as much pleasure as the rest of us in hearing everyone's really positive stories and hearing everyone's, you know, outpouring of love. And it's yeah, even hearing from people who don't even follow the sport over the last couple of days about that they had met Kev at this event or seen him in this place. And
yeah,
there was one person who got in touch with me on Twitter who I worked with at LBC, who said she met Kev on a train in Italy randomly, didn't know who he was or what he did, and ended up chatting to him for 4 hours. So
brilliant.
Yeah, and ended up becoming
him.
You know,
that was him.
Yeah, very good friends with him. So it's amazing that it's he reached people in that way. And you know, I hope you can take a couple of days. I know it's going to be an incredibly busy week for you, but to just remember and remember what a great guy he was.
Yeah, I think that's you know, as I sort of said earlier, huge thank you to everyone who's put messages on Twitter, because at the moment I'm kind of clinging to Twitter and clinging to those stories that I've just been able to tell, because the rest of it's a dark and depressing place when you haven't got that. So it's yeah, big thanks to everyone out there.
Absolutely, no problem. Thank you so much for your time, Neil, and we'll see you at the weekend.
Always a pleasure, Will. Thanks, mate.
Welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Touchdown Trips, getting you in the game. Thank you again to Neil Reynolds. You've heard our thoughts on the late, great Kevin Cadle, but Kev would want us to do the show as usual. So coming up, we're going to review a bizarre week 6 in the NFL. Matt Sherry and Ollie Hunter are with me, and we're live on Periscope for the first time ever. This is the Gridiron Show. Hello and welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Touchdown Trips, getting you in the game. It's really off-putting because I'm watching us on the live stream on Periscope and it's slightly behind where we are. So I'm seeing just how horrendous our dancing looked on camera about 30 seconds after it actually happened. This is the Gridiron Show in association with Touchdown Trips, getting you in the game. We're just a few weeks away from going on our massive trip out to the southern states of America, the Deep South Tour, and absolutely can't wait. But we're going to try and do some live podcasts while we're there, do some podcasts with the guys who are out on tour with us as well. So we just thought we'd do a little test run. So we're live on Periscope. There are currently 31 people watching, which is much more than I expected. So you can send your questions in if you're on Periscope throughout the show as we discuss week 6 in the NFL. And just to verify again, we've already opened the show with a 20-minute chat about Kevin Cadle, and we've spoken to Neil Reynolds as well. So whilst we're all devastated about the news this morning about such a warm and lovely man, we are going to move on and talk about the week 6 action in the NFL. And Ollie, I think there's probably only one place for us to start with the action on Sunday afternoon, because for the neutral, for the NFL fan out there, for those of us hoping for a Brady Rodgers Super Bowl, that's all gone out of the window, hasn't it?
I mean, who was hoping for a Brady back in the Super Bowl?
I mean, I would love to see. I'd love to have seen a Brady Rodgers Super Bowl in my lifetime.
I suppose you're right. Okay, I suppose you're right. Yeah. So Rodgers goes down, broken collarbone, late hit from Anthony Barr. I don't care what anyone else says. Don't care if you accuse me of being a homer, a Green Bay Packers homer. No, it was a late hit. It wasn't a violent hit. It wasn't a dirty hit, but it was a late hit. It was an unnecessary hit. And that's the thing that wrangles most of all. Because it didn't need to be done. It wasn't called, and Green Bay never really recovered. I think they were shell-shocked, managed to get a touchdown. They had one call back from the Ty Montgomery catch and fall into the end zone where he fumbled it and didn't complete the catch. And perhaps one day you could see those going your way and another day you couldn't. But ultimately, Brett Hundley comes in, third-year guy, and he's not Aaron Rodgers. That's the best thing you can say about it. He's just not Aaron Rodgers.
The Vikings go to 4-2. The Packers drop to 4-2. 23-10, the winners in Minnesota. And Aaron Rodgers likely missing for the season. I mean, you don't get a tweet coming out from the Green Bay Packers saying could miss the year
if he's not going to be most likely out for the year. It's fascinating to me. Often this happens. We do the live broadcast on a Sunday night and then I come away from it and I really start to think about it, Matt Sherry. And I think the Vikings, we know Teddy Bridgewater's back in practice this week. Likely he'll be available, you know, around week 10 time. Sam Bradford, hopefully after that setback, will be back and available soon. So they're going to have a choice of quarterbacks. Have to be the favourites in the NFC North at this point. But you know, you bring in Brett Hundley, you give him 2 years there with the offense, and there's been a lot of talk about Romo, about Kaepernick. Surely this is the point of having someone like Brett Hundley there learning the offense, and you've got to trust him to try and get you through the next 10 games and get you out with a winning record.
Yeah, and I mean, the Packers have probably the most proven track record in the NFL of the work that they do with quarterbacks, and they've reaped the benefits of that. I mean, I think I saw a stat that the next game will be only the 10th game in about the last 25 years where they haven't had Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. Now, that is a testament to the job they've always done with quarterbacks. And we're seeing that. I think we'll see that again. Brett Hundley has always looked really good in pre-season. I said this to you guys last night straight away on the broadcast. And I think he has a chance to be a good quarterback based on the small sample size we've seen. I'm kind of thrown out what happened yesterday because you could not ask to be put in a worse situation in that building, which is becoming one of the best home field advantages in the NFL and against that defense. I mean, it was a tough, tough matchup. Yeah. So I think there's potential in Brett Hundley. And if I'm looking through a positive lens from the Packers' point of view, my guess would be if they reach the playoffs that Rodgers might be in play to come back. I mean, that's completely thrown darts at the wall, but you would think that there might be an option. So if Hundley can get them there and he plays well, then you potentially have Aaron Rodgers back in the playoffs and a trade chip. So that's how I'd be looking at it if I was a Packers fan. It's the optimistic view when we see if that happens.
And I don't think you can look at anything from the Green Bay side of the ball when it comes to defense, that rush defense, which wasn't any good at all. When it comes to offense, not much really got going in any way, because it is such a shock, and it would have been such a shock to the entire organization to see number 12 go out. So put it away, start again next week against the New Orleans Saints.
I'm going to say, I think without 12, they're done. That's as simple as that. I'm sorry to be that negative about it and to try and be that forward about it. And I'm really sorry, Ollie, but I think the Vikings are too strong. They win the NFC North. And in an NFC where we've got strength throughout the conference in various places, I just think there are too many teams who will come out with a record. I think about Washington. I think about, you know, the Rams and the Seahawks and now the Cardinals to 500, although I'd be surprised if they pull anything out. You've got the Lions still in amongst the mix. You've got the Saints certainly with a plus 500 record. Atlanta, the Carolina, we all like the Bucs before the season, even though they're really struggling. And I think Alan asked us how many to win the NFC North on there. And I think the Vikings probably do it with 10 games this year. Don't think it needs to be above that. But I think the Vikings can win 12 games. Suddenly they're looking at home field advantage for the first round, second round even of the playoffs, and that becomes absolutely massive. So,
and you have to say that this is the best chance in years for a team to be able to go and play the Super Bowl in their home stadium. It really feels that
way. Without a doubt. It really is. I mean, I've fancied the Vikings all year, but...
Well, you've lucked into this, though, now.
I mean, I don't think I've looked...
You have lucked into it. You've lucked into it. It's Rodgers all the way because he was playing outstanding football.
I mean, I haven't looked. What I wanted was the Brady Rodgers Super Bowl. I've said that a few times. But I think the Vikings have a really great chance. The one caveat to everything I said earlier on the Packers is I don't think their defense and running game is good enough to carry them in the way that it'll need to with a guy starting a quarterback for the first time. So that's why I think they're done. I don't necessarily think it's just because Rodgers is out. I think they've done a bad job building the rest of the team around him. Everybody knows that. It's the reason they've only won one Super Bowl. And I think that ultimately hurts them again in this spot.
We need to get to Monday Night Football at some point, but to be quite honest with you, I'm quite happy to leave that to later in the show in that AFC
Is
South
there a game
dumpster
tonight?
Fire. Colts, Titans, both sat at 2-3. We will get to that in a little while as well. Let's go through the games kind of chronologically from the early games. And I think beyond Green Bay, the big story that maybe by Aaron Rodgers going down that's been buried a little bit, the Miami Dolphins, thanks to two touchdowns from Jay Cutler. Their fourth and fifth offensive touchdowns of the season for the Miami Dolphins go into Atlanta, become the second AFC East underdogs to go into Atlanta and win. And the Falcons, Matt Sherry, I think should start to be a little bit concerned about their performances this season.
Yeah, it becomes make or break now on Sunday. They go to New England on Sunday in that Super Bowl rematch against an eminently beatable Patriots team at the moment. But I mean, when you actually break down the Falcons' season now, outside of that game against Green Bay, you could say that they've been fairly unimpressive throughout. I mean, they nearly lost to Chicago in week one. They basically did lose against Detroit, but the call on the 1 yard line went against the Lions. They obviously have now got the defeat to the Dolphins in there. So that Packers game for me, it was more the caveat than anything else. I mean, that was the outlier that just, it was the real good performance that showed what the Falcons were last year. We've not seen that the rest of the year. And it caught up with them yesterday. And it caught up with them in a game that they were leading, I think, 17-0 at halftime.
Yeah.
And given what happened in the Super Bowl, that is a wound to have been opened up at either the best or worst possible time. Because
considering Sunday Night Football this week, they've got to go to Foxborough to take on the Patriots. If you're an Atlanta Falcon this week, you're going to be sick about the conversations of comebacks and dropping leads, because that's all anyone's going to want to talk to them about this week.
Exactly. I mean, and it goes either way, doesn't it, on Sunday? Either they ultimately go out and lose that game and they're 3-3, and then you're starting to wonder if they even make the playoffs, given the quality of the division that they're in. Or alternatively, if they go and put in a real performance and get a statement win, then maybe they turn the season around and maybe they can start arresting some of the demons from that Super Bowl. But there's definitely been a Super Bowl hangover. I think we've seen that in virtually every game. And it's just whether that coach and staff can galvanise them and pull it round.
Now, the kind of positive coming out of it from a Dolphins perspective, not just the fact that they're suddenly looking like a half-decent football team based on record alone, 3-2, they sit just a game behind the Patriots at this point. And I think they would have taken being at 3-2 at five games through the season after the way their season began. But defensively, the Dolphins look strong. They got Jay Ajayi going in the run game. You know, there's some positivity here that makes Simon Clancy's proclamations that they're suddenly in the scam for Sam look even more ludicrous than they already did.
It's just the Simon Clancy riding the highs and lows. I have no doubt he now thinks they're going to win the Super Bowl. There's no middle ground as much as we love him.
I'll tell you what though, looking forward to those games against the Patriots. I'd never as a neutral looked forward to the Patriots really playing anyone, but now seeing them play against the Dolphins, who may look a little bit spicy, looking forward to one that could be a little bit more competitive, given that the Patriots are on a bit of the downslide.
By the way, the terrible TalkSport internet has completely ruined our attempt to periscope this podcast, but we got a good 10 plus minutes of it and it looked like it would work quite well. I'll watch it back later, see what the quality is like, but let us know, give us your feedback at Gridiron on Twitter and let us know what you think and how it looked, because we'll look to do some interesting and some fun stuff while we're out in the States, if it worked, particularly as Ollie gets free data when he's on his cheeky plan.
Yeah, I need to sort that out actually. Yeah, I do.
Good man. Yeah. Good man.
I will.
We're just basically stealing all his data. Sherry, I kind of want to move the conversation on through this into the Patriots' win over the Jets. Because you're talking about the Dolphins-Patriots games and the Patriots now up to 4-2. A lot of talk about it being the game that got them healthy, but realistically, beating the Jets by a touchdown and getting a bit of luck with the decisions as well.
A lot of luck.
I'm not so convinced this was a get healthy game.
No, it wasn't. I mean, absolutely not. I mean, the only thing that I could possibly say is that the defense actually played well on first and second down throughout the game, and largely very well on third down as well, because they did force a lot of three and outs. But the bad drives were so bad in terms of giving up third and tens, third and nines against Josh McCown. So it wasn't a get healthy game at all. It was a game that concerned me further, that maybe I've got kind of gone through all this in the back of my mind thinking they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out. But are they going to figure it out? Because it gets to the point where they need to do it at some point. I mean, we're now 6 weeks into the season, and ultimately, I'm just mystified by a lot of it, because I think it's a very talented defense. I don't think it's 2010 where they were fielding offensive players on defense, and that is in both senses of that word. I mean, this is a talented group, but are they going to figure it out? And part of me does wonder how much of this is because they went out and paid Stephon Gilmore $13 million a year at a time when they're not going to pay Malcolm Butler, who won them a Super Bowl. And I just wonder whether Bill Belichick has slightly lost the locker room a little bit with that kind of move. I mean, that's all conjecture, but if you're trying to point out the reasons for this, that could be it. Maybe the team aren't buying in as much as usual.
Matt, it was a game where you were missing two of your three starting corners, which is frustrating. But Malcolm Butler had one of those real up and down games. There was at least one. There was the curse completion over his head that led to the curly touchdown on the next throw, where he really got completely caught out. But let's talk about that decision, because it is the big talking point from this game from the weekend. Look. I'll put it to you simply as this. I think that the idea that there was enough evidence to clearly overturn that, I don't think is right. And I get that there's this ticky-tacky answer that's come out today where they've really broken it down to the minutiae. But you know what? If that's the answer, then the question is wrong, because we've seen it twice in the last 2 weeks where a ball fumbled against a pylon has turned out to be a touchback and a loss of possession to the other team. Anywhere else on the field, if you accidentally fumble the ball out of play, you retain possession at the point that the ball went out of play. It's absolutely ridiculous that that's not true down in the end zone. Now, I don't know whether you turn around and you say, okay, well, to avoid people from doing it on purpose, we say if you fumble it into the pylon, then you've got to start back at the 20, but you get possession, like a reverse touchback. Or do you say, all right, well, the ball was going out of possession at the one, so let's give it to them at the one. I don't know how you figure that situation out, but there's got to be something better than handing the ball back to the other team in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, on the decision itself, I'm of the view personally that ultimately, I think he probably fumbled it, but there is absolutely no way that there was enough evidence to overturn the decision. And that's the issue. It's a process issue. I mean, and I think you're right as well that there probably is a better solution. And I mean, that solution, I think there has to be a punishment for the fumble. So I like the idea of moving them back to the 10-yard line or even the 5-yard line. But yeah, I think that the whole rule needs looking at. But the problem overall is, and moving to this centralised replay system was kind of meant to stop this. Is it so inconsistent in the league? Decisions are inconsistent. And they're inconsistent because they don't seem to be able to grasp that there has to be irrefutable evidence. There's no, I personally think he probably fumbled, but I could also look at the video and say, well, actually, he just moved the ball from his right hand to his left hand going down, and he had control all the time. So if I can do that, then it's not irrefutable. So there's no way it should have been overturned.
I mean, that's brilliantly explained. Who would have thought?
are you suggesting that you don't expect Matt Sherry to be good at his job?
Well, no. Actually, I'm suggesting that no one's really explained it as eloquently in a northern accent as Matt Sherry has.
No one's ever said anything as eloquent in a northern accent as what Matt Sherry just did. So well done, mate. You've done a brilliant job. Matt, just out of interest, and I can cut this out if we need to, I know we can't give the details of what we're doing at a certain American holiday coming up, but can we tell people that we're thinking about doing something and to maybe save the day?
Yeah.
I don't know how firmed up this thing is.
What is this?
Well, basically, this is one for the people who maybe complain that all of the NFL events we do tend to be down in London. Because we're heading up north for Thanksgiving. We can't tell you, I don't think, yet. Oh, Matt, is it signed off?
It's not signed off yet, but fine. We're hoping to be in the north.
Are we jinxing it by just doing this?
No, that's nonsense. We're heading to the northwest. Well,
you don't believe in jinxing?
We're doing something for Thanksgiving. It's going to be awesome. We'll get you all the information as it comes. Ooh. But it does involve a live event. It does involve great food. It involves three great games of football. And that is enough. So we're coming to the Northwest for Thanksgiving. And that's just a little tease for you for next month. We'll be able
all
to announce it
well.
Soon. All being well indeed.
All right.
I'm very excited about it. So that's left things in the AFC East with the Patriots topping it at 4-2, 3-2. The Jets, as we say, and the Bills at 3-2 as well. Shall we talk about one of the wildest and most ridiculous games I can remember in recent history?
Yeah.
The Detroit Lions... 38, the New Orleans Saints 52. The Saints had a 45-10 lead at one point in this game. The Lions fought it all the way back to within a touchdown, including two defensive touchdowns of their own. And then Matt Stafford manages to get tipped and picked off by Cameron Jordan, who was a wrecking machine for the entire day for New Orleans, to end up losing by two touchdowns. But literally this game, I had the... You heard maybe in the... If we did play the highlights package in, because I'm putting this together later. You'll have heard in the highlights package that literally the co-commentator was just going, weird.
Yeah.
Weird. Weird. I don't know how to...
It got weird.
He really couldn't figure out a way to look at this game. But what kind of stuns me about this game is that we had a total of 90 points. And yet, actually, I thought you had two surprisingly credible defensive performances.
That is true, isn't it? I mean, the funny part about that whole thing is when you set that up there, when you said, we're going to talk about this remarkable game, I thought to myself, well, I've come up with a game that is unremarkable as a bit of a daft gag. And then I've looked down the schedule yesterday, and the most unremarkable game I can find is Houston 33, Cleveland 17, where we saw the continuation of Deshaun Watson and this amazing rookie season. And that sums up how ludicrously good a day it was yesterday for just an amazing day of NFL action.
On
and
a crap slate
just...
of games as well. Looking at it, everyone was like, oh, God, this is going to be... This is bleak. What a bleak weekend. And then results get turned up like 52-38, hashtag I called it. But, you know, that kind of thing.
Sorry, you didn't call 55.
Well done to people who voted with the over. The thing is, for the Saints at this point, up to 3-2, they have, I think, so they lost to the Patriots at home, right? But they've already won on the road at the Panthers. I think if they're going to make the playoffs, they need to win all of their remaining home games. But that's very doable in the old Superdome. And actually, they've got pretty winnable games at home. The Falcons, we hope, will build up a head of steam by then. They go to the Packers this coming weekend, which could be a winnable game with Brett Hundley under centre. And they're suddenly, ridiculously, amazingly, the favourites in Lambeau Field. And the Saints could be on a somewhat surprising Super Bowl run. Not Super Bowl run, but maybe playoff run. Maybe I'm getting a little over the top with that. What was particularly stark, we'll get on to talking about Adrian Peterson's and the three wise men in the desert, their performance for the Cardinals this week. But the Saints, once you took Peterson out of that running game and it became focused on Ingram and it became focused on Kamara and they ran the game properly, they ran the ball brilliantly and they looked like a good team.
That's it. There's no confusion back there anymore. We know what every person's going to be doing. They got the elephant out of the room, out of the building. And now, yeah, you're right. They do look like a team. And with the wide receivers, with the tight end, and with Drew Brees, who, okay, didn't have the best day, but he'll have better days. And that's promising for the Saints.
When in the last 4 years, or maybe longer, have the Saints been able to win a game against a good team, or at least a decent team that the Lions now look like, when Drew Brees didn't have a good day? For me, that is the ultimate sign of progress.
And Drew Brees initially had a good day, but once at 45-10, I don't know whether it was a foot off the gas thing or what actually happened, but they gave up the two turnovers, which were turned. The stat lines for the quarterbacks are remarkable. Matt Stafford, 312 yards, 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Drew Brees, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Like, just a little bit of a ridiculous day all round. I'd like both of these teams. A bizarre game of football, but I'm not counting out either of them from making a playoff run at this point this year.
It got weird.
It got weird. It did get weird. Right, let's rattle through the remainder of the 6 o'clock kickoffs. What else did we have? So, I mean, you mentioned Texans-Browns. I think really the only massive talking point from that is Deshaun Watson, another 3 touchdowns, a ridiculous season for him.
Is he nailed on Offensive Rookie of the Year now?
Well, no, because you've got Kareem Hunt, haven't you, as well? I mean, it's...
Oh, great shout. Forgot about that.
Leonard Fournette's been pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Fournette's been ludicrous.
It's like an old school Heisman battle.
He's like an old school Heisman battle. I love that. So the Texans ran out 33-17 winners over the Browns. The Browns now are one of only 2 winless teams in the NFL.
Why's
a little
that,
tease
Will?
For later on. Well, it's not because it's not because of the San Francisco 49ers. The perfect season continues. The 49ers become the first team in NFL history to lose 5 consecutive games by a field goal or less as they go down 26-24 to Washington. They bench their starting quarterback, bring in CJ Beathard, who has 2 really good drives under center, the third round rookie.
I'll hoist you on your Beathard.
Nice, I really like that. Remember that one. Let's get some pirate noises going. I'm trying
to figure out how that would be a fantasy team name. I can't.
I did remember this week to try and bring some of the little noises in. So we can have Ollie giving a little bit of... No, we can't because he's muted my noises. It's magic. Oh, I've ruined it. I've done Fitz Magic early.
Oh, you've gone too early. Classic Willy.
Oh, I just wanted to play this one.
This is great banter.
Oh, it is.
I've really upset myself by shooting my load on that.
Come on, it's a family show.
This is the most upsetting thing, like, from a 49ers perspective. If you're the fan who, unlike me, considers this the perfect season, if you don't, if you're getting frustrated with these tight losses, this stat was absolutely stunning from Sunday night. The San Francisco 49ers have a negative point differential of minus 33. Not only is that not anywhere near...
You've double negative then. Does that mean they've got a positive...
No, right. So they've got a negative 33 point differential. That would be amazing if they had a losing record.
How could it be positive when they've lost every game?
You double negatived
right.
it.
A negative... point differential of 33.
Or
right?
A point differential of minus 33.
Either of those things works.
But
right?
You can't have a negative points differential of minus 33 because that's plus 33.
Matt Sherry,
maths.
Before I do this, have you seen this stat already on Twitter or anywhere?
I haven't.
Right. So let me just ask you, in the history, in the Super Bowl era of teams that have started the season 0-6, the 49ers have the best ever point differential at minus 33. What do you think is the second best point differential for an 0-6 team?
Oh, I've seen this.
I'm trying to think of... The only teams I can think of who were viable and lost a lot of games early was either the Vikings or the Steelers before they played at Wembley. So I would guess the Vikings.
Yeah, but can you forget who the team is. What do you think the point differential is for the second best ever?
Oh, minus 120.
Well, it's better than that. It's minus 80. But the 49ers have the best ever at minus 33, and the second best ever is minus 80. Ridiculous this season's been.
I'm becoming the king of conspiracy theories in this game, because when Kirk Cousins was briefly stinging it up, I did suggest that maybe he was doing it because he was scared that San Francisco go on 16, they choose a quarterback in the draft rather than signing him. But... I think this perfect season thing is reaching the higher echelons of that San Francisco organization, because anybody who watched, basically they were driving for a field goal to win the game, and as soon as they got to the 50-yard line, the new quarterback just started throwing the ball out of bounds and missing guys by a mile. And I'm almost...
Who'd had a really good game up until that
point.
He'd
been great to that point, and then it was like, oh, you're at the 50-yard line now, just throw a couple out of bounds. And lo and behold, what happened?
There was a great photo tweeted out by the 49ers of Kirk Cousins and CJ Beathard meeting at the halfway line, and they tweeted out with "game recognizes game." And I just quote tweeted it with just like "keep my seat warm, kid" or something like that, because that's essentially what that was.
Look forward to backing you up, Kirk.
So, if this is a conspiracy theory, who's going to be hiring Mark Garagos then?
Oh, that's a great question, but I don't know.
You know,
I don't know.
And suing someone about it, I don't know.
I don't know, mate. I just don't know.
right,
we haven't talked about the Colin Kaepernick, have we?
Yeah, well, maybe it's one for the off-season.
The legal situation. Maybe we'll get into that on Thursday.
We do discuss legal situations too often.
Yeah, we really do.
Just stick to the football.
What we said on TalkSport was, how do you prove it? That's my only question.
Yeah, and what's going to be said about what Colin Kaepernick has decided to do here is that he's done it just as maybe a job's opening up in Green Bay, which could shoot him in the foot a little bit. He has chosen the lawyer who represented Chris Brown when he beat up Rihanna.
Terrible human being.
Who represented, there was another really famous case that he represented. Michael Jackson in the child molestation cases.
You've got to be careful about what you say about that.
Yeah, the case was still...
you don't want to upset people because there are two sets of people. Those that believe he did it and those that haven't. And those that believe that he is completely innocent of anything, despite the big payoffs, they get really angry about it.
Right, this is not a conspiracy theory podcast. My only point was that Colin Kaepernick has made a terrible PR decision in terms of who he's decided to appoint.
We need to get Ollie doing his voice,
don't
we?
One more game from the 6 o'clock slate. The Bears! Get a second win of the season, 27-24 over the Ravens, even though they desperately tried to throw this game away.
Absolutely. I think they're right in there as well, trying to win games. Like, if it wasn't for Jordan Howard being so determined in overtime of the games, he's class, isn't he, Jordan?
Oh, God. He looks great. I think I mentioned...
I traded him away for Jarvis Landry in week two.
What are you doing? What?
It was such an... I picked Tariq Cohen up and I'd become convinced of what was happening.
Who did you trade him to?
Will Gavin? Talk about it, man. No, not Will Gavin. I'm starting to question whether he's some kind of backseat manager of this team, given how excited he seems to be.
The snorts come out. This is incredible. I mean,
it's just really funny.
Why would you trade him away for Jarvis Landry, who's got Jay Cutler throwing to him? I know he's Jay's favourite wide receiver.
Can
but
I just say,
what are you doing?
Neil Dutton advised me to do it.
Never do what Neil Dutton says.
Never do what Neil Dutton says. Apart from starting Austin Seferian Jenkins, who got me one and a ghost touchdown this weekend.
Neil Dutton said when the day before Stephon Diggs had that massive game a couple of weeks ago, don't start Diggs. Diggs is rubbish when Bradford's not playing.
Don't forget to tune into Thursday's podcast for Fantasy Darlings with Neil Dutton.
Fantasy what?
The Fantasy Darlings. The stark reality from this game is that Baltimore, the offense went awry again. They had to rely on that big kick return in order to get them back into the game. The Chicago Bears, with their rookie quarterback under center, who looked really good against the Vikings and lost, didn't look very good in this game overall, was only allowed to throw the ball 17 times while they rushed the ball 54 times in total. I think 36 of those with Jordan Howard.
Yep,
absolutely crazy. This is... I kind of a little bit like the Jags' performance of the week before. It's what they wanted to be. I believe in Mitchell Trubisky more than I do Blake Bortles at the moment. But, I still don't believe in the Ravens particularly. They're having as up and down season as those Jacksonville Jaguars. And let's talk about that game. The Rams, special teams, wins the day as they go 4-2 to top the NFC West, whilst the Jacksonville Jaguars can't buy a back-to-back wins for love nor money and fall to 3-3 with a 27-17 loss. Yeah.
They still can't win in Jacksonville.
I'll tell you a place they can win every time they play there.
Where is that? I don't know. Do you know where Jay Ajayi was born as well? It's exactly the same stat that everyone rolls out. I apologise for bringing it up. Sorry, Will Gavin, I cut you off. How did they win?
It's absolutely fine. So the Rams, Farrah Cooper returned a kickoff 103 yards to start the game. Leonard Fournette then went, anything you can do, I can do, not quite as well, with a 75-yard touchdown run.
Can I just say on Fournette, right, and we saw this in college, his acceleration on that touchdown run is one of the most ridiculous things that you'll ever see.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way he just bent between those two defenders, the way once he got his head of steam, it was insanity, he is special.
He's very special. But you had a Greg Zuerlein 56-yarder. You had Malcolm Brown blocking a punt for an 8-yard return for a touchdown. This all came down to the special teams. Well, Jason Myers missed field goals left, right and centre. There were some bad
blocks. Oh, they were nasty bad field goals.
There was some. There was a couple of blocks, and there was a blocked. There was some bad clock management as well from Sean McVay late on, which nearly allowed the Jags back into it. But again, they can't hit field goals, so it didn't really matter in the end. But yep, the roller coaster continues for Jacksonville.
I think what that game illustrated is something I've said a few times on the show this year, is the problem with Jacksonville's style is everything has to go a certain way for them to win a game. And that is any game, basically. They're not going to win on offense as a functional NFL offense because they won't throw the ball. So as soon as one of the other ones lets you down, so when special teams lets you down, you're going to lose the game. And that, I think we said, that's why there's a low ceiling for the Jags this year, because ultimately it's so much pressure to have to be perfect at those other elements that it's just not going to work week to week.
But they're in Indianapolis this coming week. Getting that game before Andrew Luck gets back could be key to them. Although we don't know what happened on Monday Night Football yet. And maybe this is the point, because we're talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I can give you a little roundup of the AFC South, to take a little quick break and then get a bit of Monday Night Football thoughts.
Hello, you're listening to the Horse Ramble Daily, where we'll be covering all of your horse needs. And there's more. Every day during the Cheltenham Festival, Betway are giving you the chance to win £50,000 in the free-to-play or to win game. Head to betway.com to play now. Up next, more horses. Horse, horse, horse. Horse, horse, horse. Horse, horse, horse. Full terms apply. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org.
I'm just going to keep the Monday Night Football thoughts brief. I just had the chat with Neil Reynolds, which you've already heard on the podcast. Feeling it a little bit, so I'm just going to go through it very quickly. Tennessee Titans, 3-3 now after a 36-22 win over the Indianapolis Colts. A much tighter game than it actually looked, thanks to a late long score from Derrick Henry. Conversion as time expired. 36-22 it finished. But, the Indianapolis Colts had a chance to very much get back into this game at 29-22. They had a 4th-and-1 instead of running it up the gut with Frank Gore or Jacoby Brissett, who, let's not forget, he's basically the same size as Cam Newton. He weighs about 2 or 3 kilos less than him, maybe a couple of inches shorter, but he's a tank of a quarterback, so could absolutely potentially run over that line. The Tennessee Titans run out winners. Terrible challenge from Chuck Pagano, which means he doesn't get enough timeouts. It means they're trying to force the fumble late on instead of trying to just play basic run defense, and that allows Henry to break off the big run. Look, the Titans abandoned the kind of being too exciting, too ridiculous. Marcus Mariota played very much in the pocket, didn't run out, didn't do anything too silly, but actually was a really good pocket passer. Had the one huge completion that kind of got them back into the game, to targeting Taylor Tewan, the rookie. The kind of fourth quarter score, one of the two fourth quarter scores that allowed them to pull away from the Indianapolis Colts. And whilst the Colts, there are a lot of positives from this performance. Jacoby Brissett was brilliant, 21 of 37, 212 yards and a touchdown. Doesn't show how good he was, but showed flashes of real greatness. Came up a bit short late on in the game, and you know Andrew Luck's going to be back in there. Surprised that Marlon Mack's not getting more run. They went to Turbin, they went to Gore. There wasn't a huge amount of Marlon Mack in the game, I kind of noticed. But all in all, you know, these are two AFC South teams who have got flashes, have got potential, but I don't think are quite there at the moment. And maybe when Mariota gets fully back healthy, then the Titans have a chance to pull away in an AFC South, which, you know, with three teams at 3-3, you can see just how average it is at the moment. So maybe this was the best game the Titans could have possibly had right now. They move on, the Colts move on, and we move on.
Right, three more late games. Sunday Night Football still for us to get to. The Kansas City Chiefs. The champagne corks are popping in Miami as they lose 19-13 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I haven't actually managed to watch this game back yet, and I was watching it, obviously, as we were doing the show live. But the assessment seemed to be that this wasn't, not unlike the performance for the the Patriots at the Jets, this wasn't a case of, well, we've got this unit, which is the Pittsburgh offense, which is misfiring and needs a chance to get healthy. It wasn't a case that they had a brilliant game, although Le'Veon Bell ran the ball brilliantly. It just seemed that the Chiefs tried all of their usual scheming and tried all of their tricks, and just nothing seemed to be coming off.
Two things stood out to me in this game. One, that the Steelers' defense, for all it comes undone against the Patriots because of zone, just doesn't work against Tom Brady. Zone does work against this Chiefs' offense because all the creative little handoffs and not knowing where the ball is, you've got defenders looking at the ball all the time. So I think it's tougher to play against zone in these instances. So that was one of the things that really stood out to me. And the other thing was, you got an aging quarterback, you got a great running back. It's not difficult. Hand the ball to the running back more often. Let Ben take a step back and just become a guy who can make the odd big completion on third down and let this offense run through Le'Veon Bell. And I think the Chiefs are a good matchup for the Steelers because of those reasons. But also you would hope that the Steelers found a game plan that ultimately they can start to carry forward on offense.
This game was ludicrously similar to their playoff game in January. Ridiculously similar to the outcome of that one. I still think the Chiefs, I think you're right, it's a matchup which doesn't suit the Chiefs. I still think the Chiefs are a very, very good football team, and I still expect them to win both the AFC West and to go deeper in the playoffs than maybe they have in the last couple of years. But this is a big blip, and it's going to have to be one that we pay a lot of attention to, because in particular, they just couldn't run the ball at all. Mm. Kareem Hunt, when you're seeing a zero on your fantasy score for Kareem Hunt through 2.5 quarters, it's very confusing.
Oh, it's so...
And they couldn't stop the run either. That's usually what a bad football team is. If you can't run the ball or stop the run, that usually says a lot about your team. So, yeah, troubling game for the Chiefs, without doubt.
Yeah, worrying as well, because Tyreek Hill and someone else went out with a concussion, and on a short week, because they play on Thursday... you'd expect perhaps one or maybe both of those, Chuck Kendrick West being the other, one or both of those two to go out and not be able to suit up because they might not get through the concussion protocol in a short week. So, the Kansas City Chiefs are not looking great.
Indeed, indeed. Shall we move on?
Always.
We promised it would return. Oh, should I gone with the long one? Sorry, oh. I've ruined it. This is the game where the Arizona Cardinals actually come out as the winners in this one, but Fitzmagic comes in for an injured Jameis Winston and puts on 27 fourth quarter points to make this game look respectable.
I'll tell you what it was, though.
Arizona Cardinals. Sorry. It was junk or garbage. No amalgamation of those two words.
It was gunk. And I'm sorry I keep interrupting.
It makes me feel sick when you say that word. Like, actually sick in my
stomach.
Yeah,
but it was really gunky.
38 to 33, the Arizona Cardinals. And the three wise men in the desert. No, I've made that joke already. Damn it. Three old men doing what they did. Carson Palmer ran the offense with some real efficiency. Adrian Peterson, 26 carries, 134 yards and two touchdowns, including a stunning early drive. And Larry Fitzgerald with 100 receptions for 100 receptions.
Jesus. Just go to bed, Will. Man.
What a
game. 10 receptions.
What a day he had. It was a career day from Larry Fitzgerald.
Just when you thought his career couldn't get any better.
He gets 100 receptions. He went for 1,000 yards. It was unreal.
The irony was he had 100 receptions for just 200 yards. It was just all these little dump-offs and never got past the line of scrimmage.
Oh, so gunky.
Oh, God.
10 receptions for 138 yards. And what? A touchdown as the old men in Arizona meant that this weekend at Twickenham, we might actually have a half-decent game of football. Is that of everything I've said there, is that the most ridiculous thing I've said? Hysterical!
I want to get hysterical.
We don't get great games in London anymore.
Don't be so negative. I think it's going to be a really good game this weekend between the Cardinals and the Rams. I'm really excited about the matchup. Will it be as
impressive as Ollie's brief a cappella Fitzmagic. That was awesome. You hit that note beautifully, Ollie.
Well, I can get a few notes.
By the way, we are going for karaoke the first night we get to Houston. So we're going to be jet-lagged karaoke, and Matt Sherry's not going to be there. It's devastating
news. In fairness, I will be spending that night in Tuscaloosa watching Alabama LSU, so I'm fine.
Boring.
That's
obviously not boring. I'm just annoyed I'm not there. I'd much rather be listening to Ollie Hunter banging out Meatloaf for the year.
And I will be banging
out
Meatloaf.
Trust me, I'll get to listen to that enough over a couple of weeks anyway. So.
The big question here is this a one-off explosion from Adrian Peterson, or actually can he carry this on beyond this week against a better run defence in the Rams next weekend? And how concerned should we be about Tampa Bay?
I think you'll find that if you listen back to our preview podcast when we found out that Adrian Peterson had gone to the Arizona Cardinals. I said that Peterson was not done, and this
He's
would
not
happen.
Done.
And I said that Peterson. I didn't say any of that. I'm lying. I can't even carry on my own falsehood. It's such a shock. I thought he would be done, but no. Matt Sherry, why did you say he isn't done? He isn't. Well, we know why, because he had a really good game.
No, I think I was. I mean, the proof that I knew he wasn't done is the fact I picked him up in our fantasy league and started him this week. Like, I just think that whole Saints situation, from the style of their offense and the fact that they had two other younger running backs who ultimately were more suited to what they wanted to do, was a terrible situation for
them. Not just that, but hey, guess what? Drew Brees likes to take passes from the shotgun. That doesn't work with the style of running back Adrian Peterson is. Give him someone who goes under center, let him get up the head of steam, he's going to get you yards. It's so simple. It's just so simple. Oh, it's so frustrating.
So simple.
Bloody Sean Payton. Two games left and two more ridiculous games to talk about, both involving AFC West teams. And let's start off with this. In a weekend of weirdness, ridiculousness and oddity, could anything be weirder than the Chargers winning a game they were losing in the fourth quarter? As Nick Novak kicks a 32-yard walk-off field goal with the final play of the game, that's what walk-off means, after a missed extra point from Giorgio Tavecchio, means that the Chargers beat the Oakland Raiders 17-16. These two teams both fall to 2-4, and we're going to talk about Sunday Night Football in a moment. The AFC West, from being what we thought was going to be the best division in football, has suddenly turned into a garbage fire.
It's become a real mess, and I mean, Do we think that the Los Angeles Chargers could be on the verge of launching a playoff push?
I think that's a little on the ridiculous side, but
I'm just desperate to cling on to the belief that
the Dolphins were 2-4 last season, and they went on a playoff run.
The reality is that even the games they've won have been pretty unconvincing. I mean, they just have to play close games. But, I mean, the storyline is the Raiders. I mean, I think we both... Oh, Jesus.
They've lost four on the bounce.
What was that?
Tried to be really smooth about it then, and you ruined it.
I'm sorry. It reminded me of that Sam Matterface clip from Clips of the Week.
The one where he gets hit by a ball, as he's nearly hit by a ball. Yeah.
He goes, oh, Jesus.
Jesus.
What's going on, Sherry? What happened there? That was really funny.
I put ESPN on just to see the Chargers upcoming schedule, and then it was loud. It was so loud.
Our manager, our boss, spoke to me about our coverage on TalkSport 2 last night, which was a gridiron takeover. Me, Ollie and Matt presenting the 5 until 9 show. Ollie Wilson with us as well, doing a fantastic job of doing the updates. And he mentioned there was only one point in the entirety of the night that I really felt like I let the professional mask slip. Can you remember what it was, Ollie or Matt?
No.
It was the moment where the Jets, and I think it was Curly, got that catch right down on the goal line. And I literally, while Sherry was saying something, went, oh, what a catch! Like, the fan in me just completely exploded out. Bovell loved it.
Oh, great.
Bovell thought it was great.
Oh, so therefore he would have loved me being totally unprofessional for the entire 4 hours.
There was only one moment you had the professional mask slip. I was thinking, what?
Well, I'm not Al Michaels, mate. Come on.
Whoa.
look, the Raiders are terrible. They're 2-4. They've lost four on the bounce. Derek Carr didn't look good coming back off that injury.
It's going to get ugly as well, because the fans are going to turn with the Las Vegas stuff. Somebody, the spectre of that in the background.
Somebody actually sent us a Raiders question while we were doing the Periscope earlier, but I now can't get back on there to find it. So somebody did ask us simply, why are the Raiders slipping so badly? And I think the answer is...
Because Jack Del Rio is the head coach, and I've been on this bandwagon since last year. And the decision to go for it on 4th-and-2 in this game was an absolute disgrace.
What bandwagon,
Black
sorry?
Jack Del Rio. Jesus.
It's a great piece of music.
Right, last game of the weekend. The New York Giants go to the Denver Broncos with no wide receivers, going up against the best pass defense in football, going against the best rush defense in football statistically with no recognizable running back. Orleans Darkwa goes over 100 yards, and they beat the Denver Broncos with one of the best home field advantages in football in Mile High, under the lights, 23-10. What's going on?
What's going on? What is going on? It was a weird game to cap off a weird Sunday.
The theme of our broadcast at the 6 o'clock window yesterday was, we don't know anything. Like, that's what you were learning every game in the NFL. And then that ludicrous Sunday just topped off by this result. The fact that they not only beat them, but beat them so comprehensively was just insanity.
There were a couple of key things in the game. Part of it, you saw the two drives in the first half, which led to the offensive scores for the Giants. Both long drives, both methodical drives. Eli Manning only threw for 128 yards on the night, but you had Orleans Darkwa going 117. And when you look at these two, 75-yard drive and an 80-plus yard drive, Ben McAdoo handed the offensive play calling over to the offensive coordinator, Mike Sullivan. And you could see the difference in the guy who Eli has trusted for such a long time as his quarterback coach. There's just a chemistry there. They knew what they were doing. It all came together really nicely. And yes, the Broncos defense actually really sorted themselves out in the second half, had a really good second half. We saw Adam Gotsis, now friend of the show, get his first sack. They got an interception. They were better, much better in the second half. The interception touchdown, that was, of course. And oh, no, the Giants got an interception touchdown, didn't they? I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm completely lost.
But what's
going on with you, Will?
I'm so tired.
The last 20 minutes have been really... Me and Ollie are carrying this podcast.
Shall I just stop? You guys, I watched this game in full, live on the radio, and I can't even talk about
What's stark for me was the two defenses, because the Giants defense were unreal. Janoris Jenkins, Landon Collins, you had JPP who had three sacks, and then conversely on the other side, the Denver Broncos, Von Miller, I said it about 5 minutes before Kevin Kugler said it on our coverage. I'd forgotten he was even in the game, and then I went and watched all of his the subsequent plays. It's not like he was double-teamed. He was single-covered by either Eric Flowers or Bobby Hart or Justin Pugh or DJ Fluka. And single-covered, and Von Miller wasn't doing anything. He ended up with one tackle and one sack. But it's bizarre that that happened, because Von Miller wasn't his usual self. And I think that's part of the reason why they could... The Giants' run game got going, and Evan Engram, that was
he had a great game.
That was the least best. That was the worst kept secret in all of football, that he would be getting most of the yardage and the receptions and the targets, and the Broncos couldn't do anything. It was a weird, weird game.
And on the other side of the ball, you had for the Giants' defense, you had Jason Pierre-Paul having a career day. Eli Apple had a brilliant rookie season in the slot, right? Then last week, Dominic Rogers-Cromartie turns up and says, I'm not playing anymore, I'm leaving. Walks out, gets suspended. Eli Apple in his sophomore season, through five games, has been dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. Then last night, he's forced to move from the slot to fill in for Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, and he has an absolutely brilliant game. Janoris Jenkins actually didn't have a good game overall, gave up a horrible pass interference which nearly let the Broncos back into the game. Demaryius Thomas overall had a really good game against him. 100 plus yards receiving for the first time this season, but he got the takeaway, he returned it. That's all that's kind of that kind of opportunistic defense that sometimes you get from that kind of corner where they're going to look to make the big play every time, and sometimes it costs you, but when they make the big play, it wins games.
And that absolutely.
And that was the Giants and the Broncos. Well done, children.
I can't believe it still.
Look, it was a great game overall. We had a great weekend of football, and obviously punctuated on Monday by the sad passing of Kevin Cadle. We gave our thoughts on it at the beginning of the show. We would love to hear from you at Gridiron with your kind of favourite memories of Big Kev. There's another big week of football to come, though. We'll be back with another podcast later in the week. There's a Twickenham game coming. There's some really great matchups. And then we've still got to talk about Thursday night football very briefly. We've talked about these two teams already. But if the Chiefs needed a game to get themselves healthy after losing their O, they get to go to the Oakland Coliseum and face the Raiders.
And I think is the concern not that this is basically completely make or break for the Raiders' season? And that going against a desperate team who basically have to win to avoid going, will they go to 2-4, 2-5?
They're 2-5.
I mean, they just cannot afford to drop to 2-5. And not with a home loss against their biggest division rival on the schedule. So I think it's a desperate Oakland team, which, combined with the fact that Tyreek Hill probably won't play, leads me to believe that maybe the Raiders get out of that one with the win.
Wow. Well, the Chiefs also lost Chris Conley, I think, for the season. That's from the game before. Kevin Kugler said it, and apologies to reference that again, but the Giants were a wounded animal, and the wounded animal will either do two of one things. It'll just give up, or it will fight. And I'm not so sure that Jack Del Rio can get his players to fight. And I am taking the Chiefs, and I think they'll bounce back with a big, big win here.
I am in Ollie's camp on this. Maybe not a big win, but a win nonetheless. Because I have nothing like sitting on the fence. And Matt Sherritt, it sounds like you're taking the Raiders.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Raiders. I'm a big believer in when teams backs against the wall, desperate. I think the Raiders have to win, and I think they'll sneak a win.
There you go. Right, so thank you very much for tuning in. It has been the very definition of a mammoth show today, but for obvious reasons. Thank you for everyone for tuning in. We will be back later this week, and we will have an exciting Thanksgiving announcement coming in the not-too-distant future. Do keep going and checking out Ben, hopefully. Do keep going and checking out Ben Mortimer and Touchdown Trips. That's great work they do, and we're only a few weeks away from going away ourselves. Loads of great content will be coming from our trip, so cannot wait for that. Thank you so much for listening. This has been The Gridiron Show.
Well, what about final thoughts?
The podcast is an hour and a half.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter interior paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.